high drop for Jackie Elka.
Goal! Oh, what a goal! What a goal! What an unbelievable finish to the Merseyside
derby! Hello, welcome back to the Talking Blues podcast, your source for all things Everton. My name's Thomas, joined again by Terry McAllister and Owen Parks. Today, going to be bringing you... But first of all, I'm going to start off with an extra time from... Easily our most disappointing performance of the season so far away to Southampton. Then we're going to move on to one of our retro rumours segments. So we're going to talk more about managers this week. A couple of big names, very exciting. Neil Lennon's even going to come up at one point. But we'll save that for later on the show. First up, we're going to do our extra time. It's our first loss of the season, very disappointing, but we're going to dissect it in a bit more detail today, joined by Terry McAllister and Owen Parks. And obviously, very disappointing result overall, as I mentioned. Bit of a, you know, coming back to earth. I'm not sure anyone thought we were win the league or anything, because there was those accusations on Twitter, people going on, everyone's buzzing Everton finally lost, but I think that shows where we're on the table. But Terry, coming to you first, just general reaction of that absolute shambles that it was. It's a few days ago now.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's had a mad result so far, haven't they? Maybe this is our one. We'll go back to winning every game now. It's not told us anything we didn't already know. I mean, what this game has done has shown just how light we are on depth for quality. We've got plenty of bodies, plenty of numbers, absolutely no quality in depth in certain areas of the pitch. So, you know, the personnel we've chosen in this game has upset not just, you know, there's obviously been a drop-off man for man, you know, with Richarlison and Coleman going out, but it also has lowered the overall quality of the teams. It's upset the, you know, the formula a little bit. So the players who are used to, you know, certain, you know, combinations, certain, you know, teammates being around to help them out, they haven't been there, and it's lowered their games as well. So, and frankly, Southampton played really well. Like they clearly done, you know, their homework on Everton, clearly knew a way, you know, to hurt Everton. And they exploited it and we didn't really have an answer. I mean, the first 20 minutes, I think they came out and, you know, they paid us a little bit of respect and we sort of went back and forth. But I think the key for me, and I don't want to just, because no player really acquitted himself very well, but I don't want to pick on individual players just yet. But I think when we were playing in the first 20 minutes, the penny dropped for them that we didn't have pace to hurt them on the break, because every time we give it to Iwobi, who would have been Richarlison typically, instead of, you know, attacking the goal directly like, you know, Richarlison would do, Iwobi slowed things down and kept bringing it back and looking for, you know, wanting more time than he had on the ball. And I think that sort of, you know, just informed Southampton a little bit that Everton can't hurt us on the break, so what we're going to do is we're going to push up and hit them out wide, especially down our right-hand side, which, you know, we'll go over in a minute. They certainly did. So our team selection didn't help us play our best game, and it played right to the hands of Southampton, who, as we said in the, you know, the preview show, full of energy, full of pressing, full of pace, and a little bit of quality where it mattered. So it just wasn't our day. Too many players missing and a couple of other players who weren't the races who were playing.
Yeah, it was a good performance by Southampton, to be fair. They're clearly a very decent side. They know exactly what they're doing, but we didn't exactly help ourselves. Owen, what were your general reactions to that?
To be honest, I think me and Terry were speaking in the preview before the game, and he could probably tell I wasn't feeling too confident by the game, because I was saying we haven't really done well there, and I just felt their high press would kill us, and it did. What their high press did we're having no Richarlison, we didn't have that option to going over the top. So they didn't have to worry about dropping back 10 yards because they knew Calvert-Lewin's a great 1v1. James isn't really going to beat a man, and Iwobi's not going to do that either. So they could just press on us and win the ball back higher up, because we had no way of just hitting them on the break, like Terry said. Defensively, I didn't think... The things that we've been getting right defensively, even when we haven't been keeping clean sheets, we've been getting through moments and then finding the moment ourselves. We didn't do that. We conceded two quick fire goals. Could have been three. It was just a mess from, like, the goalie to the striker. It was just a mess. credit to Southampton, though. I thought they played very well until they put the foot on the gas once. Once Luka Dean got sent off. But like I said, it was just an overall poor performance. I hope that's our poor performance out the way now. I think everyone's had one.
Yeah.
I'd like to see going forward a little bit more balance to our attack, even with the current injury problems we have. I'd like to see Gordon play more. And I'd just like to see us getting back to what we were good at a couple of weeks ago, which was catching teams cold on the break, as opposed to just trying to walk the ball in. And I feel like times on Sunday, we were just so slow. We were like a 90s Dutch team. We just couldn't move.
Yeah, we spoke about Richarlison there. You take Richarlison out of the team, obviously a lack of pace. No one's really going to beat a man. Another player that we're obviously missing, Seamus Coleman, to injury. And, of course, with Jonjo Kenny also injured, Ben Godfrey comes in for his first start. Came off the bench against Liverpool at right back. Did quite well, I thought. Terry, what did you think about him at right back in this game?
He was really uncomfortable, wasn't he? And he was doubled up on. Simple as that. They'd identified, like, James is not going to, you know, track back much. They're going to pull a defender across, usually to Corey, to cover him. So if we push up on Godfrey, this is Southampton, they're going to leave spaces in the middle. And, you know, it's what we did all the time. Like, you know, for the drag backs, for the goal, there was no one there to cut them out. To be honest, the Henderson goal that never was against Liverpool was the same, wasn't it? You know, there was a drag back and one of the midfielders wasn't there to sort of counter it. Godfrey's not a right back. If he was part of a back three or if he's moved to centre back, he'd do all right. But there was nothing he could do. He tried to get forward as much as he could, but he couldn't beat a man when he got hold of it. He was very much a centre back playing at right back. And that sort of hurt James's game as well, where every time James got it, there was no space opened up for him with the overlap and run, because Godfrey, because of the pace that Southampton had down that side, he didn't want to overcommit himself constantly because he would have just left one side exposed completely. So he stayed back a lot. I just think it was a square peg in a round hole. I think, you know, we obviously thought we'd get away with it because, you know, he's good athlete and good defender. And we went to know before the game that a big part of their tactics was going to be to try and exploit that side. So I don't know whether we'll see him in the next game, whether Jonjo Kenny will be back. No, I don't really particularly rate Jonjo Kenny, you know, as a top Premier League player. But I think for the overall balance of the team, it might be better just to have a natural right back in that position. Even if you were to move Godfrey inside and, you know, play him at centre back alongside one of the other two. I think that is going to be something we're going to see teams try and exploit if we're going to play him out of position, because he was very limited there.
Do you want an unpopular opinion? Everton get at least a draw yesterday if Gibril Sidibe was right back, because he would have forced them back. He would have overlapped and he would have pushed them back, but they'd have had something to worry about. Godfrey, he couldn't get forward. So DB had his very best, got forward and made teams think about what they had to do defensively. Or else he couldn't defend himself, like, but he was pretty decent going forward.
Yeah, I think you could play a centre-back at full-back if you had Richarlison ahead of them, because he's got the pace and the direct running to go down the outside, and he comes back and covers, you know, enough to, you know, to help out. Whereas James, you know, we're playing a 4-3-3, and James is like a member of the front three who's got the free roll. Like, you know, usually, you know, Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin are like moving forward whenever James gets the ball, and he feeds the two of them. That's fine. That works for us going forward in attack. But I think the right back then needs to have a bit of both. You need to be able to go up the line to court, you know, to pen push the opposition fullback back, and be able to go up and down and provide something himself, provide an the outside ball for James. It didn't work. It was too blunt. He's not slow, Godfrey, by any means. He's quick, but he's not quick in the sense of he's going to beat a man, you know, with a standing start. He's got recovery pace. He's not got blistering pace, you know what I mean? So it was just I before the game, when I saw the lineup, I was like, not much we could have done about it, but I was like, that's slow. They're a really fast team in wide areas, and we've got very little pace. They're the only fast player we've got in the whole team. You'd say as fast as Calvert-Lewin, and he's an off-the-ball type fast. He's not going to pick the ball up and run with it. So I thought we were in for a difficult afternoon when I saw the lineup, but again, it's things we can't avoid, you know, like Richarlison's a massive miss, and it just shows that front three and probably, you know, the middle three that we've been playing, at least two of them are going to be nailed in for whenever they're fit, they're going to play. And then the rest of the team, like the centre backs and the, you know, the not so much the left back, but the centre backs and the right back, you know, it's going to be, you know, mix and matching for a few games, aren't we?
Yeah, and obviously we were kind of forced into those two changes because of injuries. And obviously we were forced into two changes at the weekend, but a change that Ancelotti clearly decided to make was taking out Gomez in that third centre midfield role, giving it to Gylfi Sigurdsson instead. Owen, what did you make of that change?
I was all for it, so I'm not going to sit here now and say, oh, what a terrible decision that was. I'd have done exactly the same. I think what hurt us more was, like Terry said, pacing wide areas. I think that they weren't blistering through the middle to Southampton, but they got in around us through the sides very well and got the ball in the box. But yeah, Gylfi weren't brilliant, but it was a product of everyone not being brilliant rather than just it being Gylfi Sigurdsson. Having any other midfielder in it, I don't think would have made any difference. I think what I would say is for next week, my third midfielder with Alan and Decore would be Fabian Delph.
Terry, do you agree with that?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not the biggest fan of Delph. But what this game made me think is the way we're set up. You know, I hate to do this, but if you look at the way Liverpool set up, their front three, all right, Firmino comes back a little bit, but their front three are very high and left to it. Whereas I think I was watching when what I took away from the game was if Gbamon can stay fit when he's back, and obviously providing he's all right, we don't know whether he's going to even cut in the Premier League yet because he hasn't even played. But if Gbamon is a decent player and can stay fit, I can imagine Gbamon being the third one of that middle three. So you've got not as much creativity in there, but you've got proper defensive cover and, you know, actual structure, because I don't think Alan personally suits the number six role, in as much as he'd probably be better in the sort of Idrissa Gueye, sort of pressing role. Like he keeps having to come back. You know, how many times have you seen him running backwards when we're getting counter-attacked? He's not sitting in front of the back four. In this game, he's sort of going to try and press, and I think that's what suits him better. He's the best way I can say it is he makes me think of an Idrissa Gueye, not a Schneidlin. And I think that might be what we do. We might sort of move Decore into the Andre Gomez, Gylfi Sigurdsson role, the player who can, you know, get forwards and help the attack. And then have Gbamon and Alan going forward. Now, short term, it might be Delph because, you know, Delph, he's far more defensive than Andre Gomez and Sigurdsson. Because Gomez was terrible against Liverpool, so I was all for, you know, changing him out as well. And Sigurdsson him and Iwobi were just identical. They were practically playing in the same pair of shorts, weren't they? Like, they were just in each other's way all game. They were just occupying a lot of the same spaces. And I think we've got all these players and all of their best position is the James Rodriguez role, where it's sort of like a number 10 with a free role. That's what Iwobi really wants to play. That's what, you know, Sigurdsson wants to play. That's what Bernard probably wants to play. And none of them are going to play it. They're all not very good in, like, the sort of the Richarlison role or the attacking, you know, central midfielder role. They all want to be that free number 10 role. And none of them are good enough to do it apart from James. So I don't think any of them will stay at the club long term. I think next summer all three will probably go because they all got on the pitch against Southampton, and none of them did a thing to make me think to play them next game. If we had Richarlison back, none of them would be in the team.
Alex Iwobi got a lot of stick yesterday, and rightly so. He was terrible, but there's no one going to mention that. What excuse of a cameo for Bernard? Jesus, I think either of us could have gone on the pitch, and we wouldn't have done as bad as he did. Jesus Christ.
A major situation we're obviously going to have to talk about. We've had problems at right back. All of a sudden, we've got a bit of a dilemma at left back. Luca Dean red card. Owen, what did you make of the challenge? What did he think it was? A red? Did he think it was a yellow, an orange, you know, whatever you want to call it?
An orange. it's irrelevant because we could have took our tops off to celebrate yesterday, and we'd have got a red card for it. We were getting the sending off or a dodgy penalty against us, regardless of what happened yesterday. So whether I think it was a red card or not, it's pretty irrelevant because we were always going to get one, and it's not going to get overturned either. So no, it's literally hard to judge any tackle we put in because there was always going to be a red card. Anything that was even remotely borderline. So it's just the way it is. It's a bit of a joke, but it's something that we're going to have to put up with now because we're apparently a team of fucks, which isn't said nobody ever, by the way. But fine, let's roll with it because I'd rather be known as a little bit snide than one of the media's darling play out from the back singing Ali Ali O bloody teams who just get battered 6-0 every week. So let's just take the positives off of it.
Yeah, Terry, do you agree? Was that kind of inevitable? Was it a red card?
Yeah, I mean, as Owen said, we were getting a red card for a foul throw yesterday. No matter, we were always going to get a red card, but he's made it dead easy for him, Dean, hasn't he? Like, I think if he hadn't had that little bite at him before the coming together, he might have been all right. Well, in a normal set of circumstances, he would have been all right. Still got one anyway, because, you know, that's the way it is. But he's made it so easy because he looks like he's tried to take the ball in the first instance and missed, so it looks like he swung at the player and missed. And then he's running after him, chasing him. And he's in full stride. And, you know, he doesn't change his run, doesn't change anything. So you can tell he's just ran over his leg. But it is a red card. Like, at the time, I was like, is it though? And then, yeah. Like, Robertson against us for Allen was a red card. And I think there was intent and malice in that one. But the referee doesn't know that, does he? So I think that one was a red card. So I can't sit here and say that the Dean one wasn't. But listen, like we've had the standing army of red pundits and, you know, cult member journalists and the power of the influence of that club has basically, you know, had its say this week, hasn't it? Where, you know, we've now Everton have gone overnight since because we injured one of their star names. Now we're all of a sudden a dirty team. We're Wimbledon. We kick everyone off the pitch. Going, hang on. 2 weeks ago, no one would have said this, but because one player's got injured in a freak coming together, you know, that I just wish Pickford had got sent off because we wouldn't have had all this. Now it's being cast as, oh, they're a mafia at Everton. They get away with all kinds and just not true. I'm not against the idea of being a team of arlasses, but we haven't even got a team of arlasses. We just had a really unfortunate injury happen with a stupid tackle from the goalkeeper. And now we're getting recast as, you know, prime Stoke. It's like, come on.
Don't worry. When the fans are back in Goodison and we're 2-0 up at home to Newcastle, I wasn't the Gladys Street singing 2-0 to the rugby team. 2-0.
We were getting a red card for something or a penalty or something or other, but Dean's not made it difficult for the ref there. He's the ref's had it handed to him on a plate and he said thanks very much.
Yeah, so there you have it. Don't want to dwell on that game for too long, really, so we're going to bring that extra time to a close. Back with another Retro Rumours segment. We're going to focus on managers more today. So pretty interesting ones, some pretty out there ones that maybe were never going to come true, but interesting rumours nonetheless. That be sure to let us know in the comments down below what you think about all of these. Starting off, this was a man that was linked quite a few times. Obviously, we've had managerial changes on a couple of occasions. This takes us all the way back to 2018, so not all the way back there. It was quite an exaggeration, but the Daily Star reporting that Everton have reportedly earmarked long-serving Arsenal boss Arsene Wenger as a candidate to replace Sam Allardyce as manager. Owen, I'm going to come over to you first. I mean, what do you make of that rumour in general, really?
That was fairly recent. I don't remember. Will he would have come in instead of Silva, so that's an automatic upgrade. I don't know if it would have worked out or not, but he's a top-class manager, Arsene Wenger. I think he would have set us off onto a path to better things than Marco Silva would have. It's not one of would have been particularly against. I think there's a few coming up that make me want to scratch my eyeballs off, but that was a pretty solid one. I do worry we'd have become Arsenal though and just been so easy to bully. But apart from that, I think you've got a good eye for talent. Definitely plays a better brand of football than Sam Allardyce did. So yeah, I feel like he would have would definitely have got better results than Silva. So I'm not going to be too scathing about that one. But yeah,
Terry, what did you make of Wenger? I mean, he was linked on a couple of occasions, really. But what did you make of this one, especially just after Allardyce? Because I'm just reading the article here at the moment as well. This was straight after the 2-1 defeat to Burnley, if you remember that game, when they hadn't come back from a losing position and beaten a side in like 60 games or something, and then Everton roll up to Turf Moor, we end up losing. But this was at the time, actually. And then Wenger was actually, he was still at Arsenal at the time, I think. They'd just lost 2-1 to Brighton. So it feels like a long time since Wenger was there. Obviously, everyone's had a couple of managerial changes. But Terry, what did you make of potentially Arsene Wenger being the Everton manager?
I remember this rumour, which is like shocking for me, because every single retro rumour we do, I don't remember them and have to be reminded. But this is what I actually do remember, because I remember a mate of mine, a Liverpool fan, saying to me, would you have Wenger? This might have been a bit later than that. I think it might have been that summer. And I remember thinking very clearly, no, because I want a young, energetic manager who can take us, you know, into the next 5 years rather than one who's on his way down. So I apologise to the Toffee Blues for admitting to this, because no one's ever going to watch a video with me and ever again when I admit now that I would prefer at that time Marco Silva over Arsene Wenger. It just shows how wrong you can be, because that is a shocking take. Like if I watched a video now with someone who said that, I'd so sorry for the views going down now.
one by one.
Now it just seems absolutely daft to suggest it. Like, obviously, his stock was low, wasn't it? Because he was at the tail end of his Arsenal career. And, you know, it was right at the height of, you know, Arsenal fan TV and all that. And, like, it became a meme, hadn't it, Wenger out? So I was thinking more a case of, I don't want to be associated with all that, because we'll just get like, what's Wenger doing now? How is he doing now? I thought, I want someone who's fresh in, who can just make his own way. And I just, Wenger would have been, he's a great manager. He's a top, top manager. He's not as good as he used to be, but, you know, Carlo Ancelotti, he's not as good as he used to be. You know, like, he used to win Champions Leagues every year and stuff, but doesn't mean he's not good enough for us. So Wenger, he would have bought probably better players than we've bought since Silva came in. I know that's a joint thing with Marcel Brands. And I don't even know whether Wenger would have worked with Brands, because he's never had a director of football. So that would have been an interesting one. But Wenger, if he goes back into management, if we need a manager in the near future, which I hope we don't, but if we ever do, I would be very up for Wenger, because I think Wenger's one of the great footballing minds, isn't he?
Yeah, at the time I remember thinking it was just never going to happen, really, because I think everyone could tell as soon as he left Arsenal he was going to take time out. But I was never directly opposed to it, to be fair. I get what you meant at the time, Terry, with kind of that older manager, but I'm not sure. I mean, again, I was also I was a fan of Marco Silva. I mean, whenever that was, 2 years ago now, obviously, we all know hindsight is 2020, as people say. I think that was a big mistake, anyone not being a fan of Silva.
I was as much a fan of Marco Silva as I am Graham Potter. Love him.
And if any of the YouTube viewers don't know, Owen's not a tremendous fan of Graham Potter. But yeah, I mean, at the time, I remember thinking Wenger wouldn't be the end of the world. It wasn't really a name that was going to be that exciting. But a name that definitely could have caused absolute chaos if he joins in 2016. Moving on to Ryan Giggs. This comes from The Guardian. Quite a remarkable article. Where it also name drops Manuel Pellegrini, Frank de Boer. And eventually Ronald Koeman, saying that Ronald Koeman was not interested in talking about the Everton job.
Ever. I don't think he's had a worse shortlist than that.
At the time, Koeman wasn't interested in the Everton job because he was about to sign a contract extension at Southampton. So we would turn to Ryan Giggs, apparently, instead. Terry, I'll come to you first on this one. Do you ever fancy Ryan Giggs as the Everton manager?
No. Why would I? It's like, that's one thing I'm really glad we've never done. We've made poor managerial choices. Like, obviously we have, but we haven't we have, they made sense at the time, a lot of them. Like Marco Silva actually didn't, because he'd been binned off by Watford, and I was never like super pro Marco Silva. I was one of them Paulo Fonseca people. That was where my flag was. But I was, you know, obviously we talk about the Wenger one. I was more pro Marco Silva than him because I just thought it would have been a good fit. Whereas now we know that the older manager with experience fits us a lot better. Giggs, my wider point there was, I'm glad with all of our poor managerial appointments, we've not been sucked into this absolute nonsense of signing, appointing managers based on their playing days and their name. Like, you know, some of the biggest clubs in the world have done it, like Lampard at Chelsea for no, like, he's shite. He doesn't deserve to be there. And Solskjaer at Man United, the longer he's there, the better, because they'll only ever get to a certain point at best, and they'll net, you know, that's, they won't be able to leave anyone else behind while he's the manager. You know, who else? Thierry Henry, Monaco. It's like,
Mikel Arteta have a worse record than Unai Emery, by the way.
It's like, how many more of these novice managers with an half-decent, you know, name from their playing days are we going to have to see absolutely fail before...
Chris Brunner at West Brom in a few years, maybe, after he's retired.
Yeah, and plus it wasn't even like, we wouldn't even be going for one of our legendary players who we love. It'd be like, basically he'd have been in the sort of training lobby to see if he's good enough to take over at Man United. See how he does at Everton, because that's the way that the media think, basically. Same with players and apparently with managers as well. If he can cut it at Everton, then he could, you know, we'll give him a go at Man United. But if he bombs at Everton, then he wasn't good enough for Man United. Glad we'd never gone there with that. Like, and I'm glad we had more sense, because the whole media were absolutely clamouring for Duncan Ferguson to take over. And Duncan Ferguson himself was saying, no, not for me. I want the top manager to get, the best manager we can get to get this job. And I was made up when he said that, because I thought, I'm glad we're not going in for this nonsense, because the media love all that. It gets column inches, and that's all it's for.
Yeah. Owen, did you, just a random question here, do you ever fancy Ryan Giggs? I can't really tell what you're going to say here.
Do you know, I was really looking forward to where I was getting my gigs in banners. No, I was not looking forward to that. Ryan Giggs. If we'd appointed Ryan Giggs, we'd be playing Burton Albion next week. That's how much of a bad appointment that would have been. He was on the list there with Manuel Pellegrini. He's been 70 for the last 10 years. Ronald Koeman, who obviously we know is not interested in Everton. Who else is on that list? Pellegrini and De Boer, who's won about 4 games in 15 years, so we were on the right course there.
When Ronald Koeman's the best shout on a shortlist, mate, you want to know what is that shortlist comprising of? That's absolutely terrible.
Well, it got better.
I never really believed the Giggs rumours.
It was when, before Sam Allardyce was appointed, he was on one with Martin O'Neill and Malky Mackay, I think. So.
Yeah, so we'll move on from this one, because I don't think we can talk about Ryan Giggs. But in the same article, it's not evident, but I think it's interesting to mention, at the time, apparently, Alan Pardew was at Crystal Palace, and he was looking to link back up with Demba Ba, David Santon and Cheick Tiote at Crystal Palace. So some remarkable links there. And then the final manager link, I'm going to come straight to Owen here, because he's mentioned it before we start the podcast. I'm sure he's got plenty to say. 2013, I believe this was. This is just after David Moyes left for Manchester United. This comes out in The Express, actually. Celtic manager Neil Lennon in the frame for the Everton job. Owen, what do you think about that one?
I mean, that job was a suited Neil Lennon, because he's got the look that he's been living out of a bin bag for the past 15 years, so he could have just took it up to a good dozen. And wouldn't not need to have done anything with the he's another one. I said to you before the podcast started, that I'm pretty sure Neil Lennon's never actually won a game of football. He's just got this sort of like legendary vibe around the game, and he's just rolled over ever since. He's just an absolute nonsense manager. I don't know even how he's currently got the Celtic manager. I think Rodgers left, he looked around and thought, you may as well do it.
Daddy, did you just call him a nonsense manager or a nonce of a manager?
Nonsense.
Something I do want to mention from this article. I'm just going to quote a bit. Having worked wonders in Scotland and in the Champions League on a limited budget, Lennon is the prime candidate, and he has admirers on the club's Goodison Club's board.
That doesn't
surprise me. It would take a big job to convince them to leave Parkhead, but Everton is likely to appeal, especially as they have the ability to break into the English Premier League's top four. Terry, what do you think about the Neil Lennon rumours?
Mate, I would prefer Sam Allardyce to Neil Lennon, and I would prefer to have Moyes back than Neil Lennon. That's probably one of the worst links. You'd have to give me some absolutely honking other options if I'm going to pick him. I hated Allardyce, absolutely hated him, and I'd have him in a heartbeat over Neil Lennon, 10 times the manager. Honestly, I think I'd dispute the football if we'd have got Neil Lennon. Absolutely. The only thing he would have been any good for is winding up Liverpool supporters if we'd have got a point against them, because let's be honest, he's not going to beat them, is he? But but if he loves to give it out to opposition fans, so I think that would have been the only enjoyable 2 seconds of being an Everton fan under Neil Lennon, because frankly, he's absolutely terrible.
What is it with these manager shortlists? We have one manager that's seemingly like, oh, well, we can take him, and we'd usually appoint him. And then we have 3 who just wouldn't get the bloody Burton Albion job. It's just absolutely nonsense.
When we sacked Koeman, one of the shortlist was Sam Allardyce, Marco Silva, it wasn't Fonseca, might have been Eddie Howe. So Allardyce, Silva, Howe, and Diego Simeone.
It was Sean Dyche.
That was it, yes. But Simeone was on like a short list. Atletico Madrid, manager, and in the Champions League and in the top 3 of the lot of La Liga every year, and he was on it with Allardyce, who was out of work sitting on BeIN Sport.
What made me really laugh about that period though was every time we got beat, Rick Keyes and Gray used to go, "Now Everton have been beat again, Sam. What would you do different as if you had like the answers to the air for what to do with Everton?"
We've heard some terrible rumours in the video. We're going to round off here. We're going to move away from managers. This comes from the reliable source, football.co.uk. Back in 2012, apparently David Moyes held a meeting with Peter Crouch. Apparently he was available for a very cheap £8 million, so it would have been great value for money to provide competition for Nikita Jelovic and Stephen Naismith. Terry, did you ever fancy Crouch at Goodison Park?
No. he was better than people give him credit for, Crouch, but where was he at that time? Who would we have been buying him off?
I'd imagine, I'm convinced he was a Stoke for about 15 years. I'll give it a quick Google if you want to talk about him in the meantime.
He was only ever at Stoke. He was always at Stoke.
No, I mean, it's not because he's a bad player, but if we'd have got him, we wouldn't have got Lukaku. He would have done a job, but no, he's not an Everton player, him, is he? He wasn't a Liverpool player either. He just sort of looked into one or two seasons where Liverpool were in a bit of a transition, so they made some use of him. But
he was in his first season in the Stoke after he just joined from Tottenham.
Yeah, he was never an Everton player. Him, he just didn't fit. Would you imagine him? Like no one would have taken to him.
At least he wouldn't have been a holding midfielder up front.
Did he ever fancy him at Goodison then, Owen?
If you'd have asked me that in 2012, I'd have probably said yeah, because I was just sick of our signings being 3 6-month transfers that we used to make in January to see us over for the rest of the season. So I'd have probably taken him at the time. Now, yeah. I mean, would he have added anything more to us than what we had there? I'd probably not. He also wouldn't have run the channels, which I'm always like from his strikers. So I don't think I couldn't have seen that one working out, Peter Crouch. He'd have probably got some goals, but
I refuse to believe that Peter Crouch in his career played for 13 clubs. There's no way his career. He was always at Stoke. I'm not really sure how that's happened, apart from his little stint at Burnley on the end of his career, which was just absolutely perfect.
I remember the first time I saw him, and he played for Aston Villa at the time. I was only young. I was at the match, and he came off the bench. So I don't know how old he was. He, early part of his career, one of the fellas behind me, he was dead quiet. This is like, coming on number 39, Peter Crouch. And someone behind me said, is he not very good at basketball or something?
Yeah, he was. I think he was about 21, 22 at the time when he was at Aston Villa. So yeah, the start of it.
He was a Stoke. He's only ever been a Stoke apart from that 6 months at Burnley.
So there you have it for the Retro Rumours video. That's all we've got for you today. Previewing Sunday's game against Newcastle United. Now for Newcastle, a decent transfer window. I'm sure we're going to get into that in just a moment. Decent transfer window then when the season starts. Two wins, two draws, two losses. Fairly indifferent start of the season, really. Someone could describe it as a very, very Steve Bruce start to the season, really. I was talking to a Newcastle fan, which you have to say on the opposition view, if you want to see his thoughts about Steve Bruce. We're not going to go into, of course, we're going to preview Everton's side of it. So, start off with Owen. Owen, what are your general thoughts going into the game? Are you feeling confident? Are you feeling that we need to bounce back from last week?
Yeah, this is the perfect game to win, in my opinion, because I think that the sort of theme I've sort of got from what teams we can and can't play against really in the last 6 months is teams that press really high up the pitch and sort of win the ball back in our own half. Newcastle aren't going to do that. For anyone who doesn't follow me on Twitter, I shared a picture of like a direct something in the penalty box. I forgot what it's called now. But that, and then there's loads of people on the line, and it basically said that Steve Bruce's tactics for the season is they'll just put everyone on the goal line and put St. Maximin on the halfway line, which worked for him, to be fair, because he's done a good job in Newcastle. Steve Bruce, no matter what the Geordies tell you, he's done really well. But it's still ultra defensive, and I think that's going to play into our hands, unfortunately, because we've got a decent amount of creativity, and they're just going to sit really deep for us to allow us to sort of break them down. But it's a must-win game for me. I think Southampton last week, I said these will work us so hard, so I'll take a point. No, I think we should be probably taking these on and beating them comfortably.
Yeah, Terry, do you agree with that? Is this the match to bounce back with?
Yeah, I completely agree. It's the ideal team in a lot of ways to play against with the players we've got missing, I suppose, because then other than St. Maxim, they haven't really got dangerous pace down the wings, and it's not to the same way that Southampton have, where they just absolutely ran us ragged, out wide, and the movements off the ball. They won't do that at all. Like last I saw Newcastle, it was against them. Which is against Man United, and what Newcastle's game plan really is to sit in deep, frustrate, and wait for their chances. And it nearly worked, nearly got a point. It was only like the 86th minute that Man United took the lead, and obviously by the end of the game it was like 4-1 near the late. Once the levy broke, then that was it. Then the floodgates were open. But yeah, it's the type of game where, I mean, I hope we don't, but if we do start Iwobi again, I think he'll have a much better time of it than he did against a team like Southampton, who had pace and like intensity and like, as Owen said, really good pressing in key areas of the pitch. Newcastle are not Southampton. It's not going to be as uncomfortable for us in style clash as it was against them. So it is the type of game, if you're going to have an away game, a team like that will probably suit us more. So it'll say a lot about, the mentality of some of the players as well. Like, can you bounce back and prevent, we haven't won the last two games. If we win this game, then we've bounced back. If we don't win this game, then we're going into the Man United game. We haven't won in three games. So it'll show what type of, sort of level of what standards the players are going to have, how they approach this game. You want to see a massive reaction from not just the players who didn't play well, who came into the team, but the players who didn't play well who were always in the team. We saw good games from the centre backs, when Michael Keane especially has been great so far. I didn't think Alan had a very good game. And James Rodriguez suffered as well. So I'd like to see all of those players, you know, get back to the level we've been seeing them at.
I know a joke that, and just the last thing on Newcastle, I do call them Steve Bruce's XG hating mags, but they will come with a game plan, and as much as there isn't the high intensity pressing, let's not say they've been lucky, because he comes with a game plan, he'll sit in a low block, and I think it's a game for our creative players to come to the fore, to be honest, to break them down.
Yeah, we are recording this ahead of Carlo Ancelotti's press conference, so we don't know about injuries yet, but one thing we definitely do know is the entire left-hand side is currently suspended. I would imagine Nkunku is going to come in for Lucas Digne, and then obviously Iwobi played against Southampton. Terry, are you happy with that? Would you change maybe Iwobi out for Bernard, even though he played very poorly against Southampton? And are you comfortable with Nkunku getting his start in the league?
Yeah, I'm happy with Nkunku to come in for Digne. I think, Delph could come into midfield, but I wouldn't like to see him at left back. I think that's it's too extreme for, you know, playing against Newcastle. That'd be just more a case, you know, for playing someone, you know, really good, and you don't want to, you know, throw a kid into that sort of pressure cooker. I wouldn't play Bernard or Iwobi personally, because the both of them had a half each against Southampton, and both of them stunk the place out. Like, I would play Gordon, and I know that's a bit of a risk with Gordon and Nkunku down that side, but it is. I'm going to get, you know, slaughtered if we don't win this game, but it is the team to do that against Newcastle, because they're not going to be, they're going to get time on the ball, they're going to get an opportunity to do what they do best, in Nkunku and Gordon, against a team like Newcastle who would be happy for us to have the ball and to frustrate us. A team that would really, you know, put us on the back foot with their pressing game, I'd be a little bit, you know, nervous about it. But we could see the two of them out down the left, and then Fabian Delph comes in on the left of the midfield three to give them a little bit of experience, like cover on that side, the same way that Decore does for the right back on the other side. Who knows?
Yeah, Owen, do you agree with that?
You know what's going to happen now? We're going to say that Steve Bruce is going to come out in a cap of tracky Sunday and start gegging pressing all over the pitch. Now we've said this. I don't expect still happen, however, but yeah, I'll play Nkunku and Gordon. I would play any of us in this call over Bernard, and as for Iwobi, is best positioned centrally, so I don't think we should be playing him there either. And we sold Walcott to Southampton, so it would be James and Gordon left back and Nkunku, and I agree, I'd put Delph in for Sigurdsson.
Yeah, and then when it comes to right back, I mean, we don't really know yet if Kenny or Coleman are back. I'm not sure if they are. Terry, what do you make of Ben Godfrey starting again? He probably have a slightly easier time than he did against Southampton.
Yeah, he was unfortunate against Southampton, because they absolutely targeted him, and didn't target him in the sense of, you know, oh, he's crap, let's all just put it down that side. But they knew that he was going to be a little bit more exposed, and he wasn't going to go forward as much, because he didn't want to overcommit. Now, that hurt James Rodriguez's game, because it denied him that sort of space that opens up when the fullback goes on the outside of him. He might not ever use the fullback, but once the fullback goes, the player who's marking him has to back off him a little bit, and he has that opportunity to switch the play. I think it will be Godfrey. I think I get the feeling that Carlo Ancelotti is like looking at this core of players, and there's some players, there's like a tier of players who he trusts, and there is guys going forward, and he's going to build around them. And then there's some who are just placeholders who he's just using for now, because he can't, you know, bring in 50 players in the one summer. He's got to use Sigurdsson at times. He's got to use Iwobi. He's got to use Kenny. I don't think he'll be using them if he can avoid it, basically, for a lot of them. So I think it will be Godfrey, because he's his player, and I don't think Kenny is likely to have much of a future long term at the club. So I think it will be Godfrey, yeah. He won't have it as tough a time, because he won't have, you know, Redmond and Bertrand pushed up against them this time.
Yeah, and obviously we do have the slight advantage in that John Pickford's not going to be sat getting wound up for another 90 minutes, as he always tends to, because obviously no fans will be there. So we do slightly have that going for us. But in terms of things you're worried about, Owen, who are you looking at the Newcastle team and you are worried about? I mean, we've spoken about St. Maximin. Would you agree he's maybe Newcastle's main danger man?
Yeah, but I'm also worried that Callum Wilson will get his obligatory goal against Everton. I don't think that's talked about enough. Every year he got one from a set piece for Bournemouth against us. It's that Wilson St. Maximin combination that would worry me the most. But if I'm going to pick out one thing that worries me the most about Newcastle, it's their low block. I just think that they defy the odds sometimes and how they manage to go through games, have 40 shots on the goal and draw 1-1. That concerns me slightly, because if there's a team who are going to miss loads of chances and just defy the odds of just missing chances against Newcastle, it's going to be Everton. We somehow drew 2-2 with them last February or March. Well, it wouldn't be March, or February.
I think it was, but no, it was February, right, yeah.
Yeah, it was some point then, and he somehow defied expectations. Didn't have a shot on target until they scored.
He didn't kick the ball until they scored their two goals in the 90th.
Their striker was that bad. They were throwing the centre-halves. They had seven centre-halves on the pitch at one point, and they still managed to get a point. That's why I called them Steve Bruce's XGA and Max, because there's no way they do what they do and get away with it. If it weren't Newcastle, because I don't actually like the fans very much, but if it weren't actually Newcastle thinking they were a big club and that, I'd actually love what they do, because it's just absolutely ridiculous. Fabian Schär and the Cells were up front in the last 10 minutes and they got a draw. Honestly, it was mad. But yeah, that's what worries me the most. Carl Darlow turning into some prime goalkeeper when he's not really that good. That worries me.
Yeah, who are you concerned most about, Terry?
Proper right back, that worries me as well.
Yeah, I've talked in this preview as if, like, I think Newcastle are absolutely horrendous, and I don't. I just think their style of play will suit our team better than the Southampton one did, like Owen said at the start. But they've got good players. Like, I like the business they've done this summer. I thought was very good, like Jamal Lewis and Alan Wilson. And you know, obviously, everyone knows St. Maxim. You know, he's fantastic player. You know, on his day, can hurt anyone. Callum Wilson worries me the most, though. He has just got the knack, hasn't he, of scoring against Everton. He's always, you know,
We're 2-0 down. We're 2-0 down. Callum Wilson and Jeff Hendricks obligatory goals against us, so we have to win 3-0.
Pretty much, yeah. Callum Wilson worries me the most, but obviously there's other players like St. Maximin and... You know, after saying all this, it'll be some crab like John Joe Shelby. The player you're sleeping on the most, it'll be someone like him who scores and we'll lose 1-0 to a spawny goal. But they've got decent players. It's just I think their style will suit our players to play against. But say Callum Wilson is probably the one I worry about the most.
Yeah, so just to round off here, Owen, any predictions? How do you think the game will play out?
Positively, I'm thinking 2-0, an early goal. The game fizzles out of it. We have loads of chances and take one at the end. Realistically, 1-1, we have 40 shots and we can see the known goal in the last minute and Steve Bruce is on the pitch.
Terry, do you have any predictions going at the game?
I've got a feeling in my waters. I'm going to go for a 3-2 to Everton. We'll concede our obligatory two goals, but I think we'll get a couple of goals. We'll get, you know, a few goals against them. James Rodriguez, possibly.
Yeah, so there you have it. Both the lads predicting wins. I'll go for a 2-0 Everton win. If there's a game that you want to bounce back from a disappointing performance, it's probably against a side that have been a bit indifferent so far this season. But I mean, they are always dangerous, as we know, because they just come up with absolutely nothing from nowhere, basically. So thank you all very much for watching. Thanks to Terry and Owen for joining me. Check out their social media. Check out all the Toffee Blues social media and join us next time on the Toffee Blues. The end for the video segment, but since my quiz master titles have been taken away from me today, I'm going to kindly hand over to Terry here. I don't know what underhand tactics he's going to employ to try and get me not to win, so I'll have to see what
he
happens
doesn't
here.
Doesn't have to do much with me being on of Jesus Christ. I just get the first hurdle.
So over to you, Terry. Take it away for the quiz.
Thanks very much, Thomas. Just do my best Jerry Gibson impression now. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the Toffee Blues quiz, where Owen and Thomas will face each other in an epic cage match of wits and might. It is another Darton 11 quiz. So I've got an actual coin here, 5p coin. So since Thomas is a cheeky bastard and said that I'm going to play tactics to not let him win, I'm going to prove him completely correct and let Owen pick heads or tails. Owen, please.
I don't know where that coin ended up there.
I caught it.
Heads.
It is heads. Would you like to go first or second?
I'll go second.
Fantastic. Right. Please cue the intense quiz music. There it is. It's very intense. So, the matching question today is the game of the 12th of March 2015. Everton's Europa League tie at home to Dynamo Kiev. So the game before the infamous Yarmolenko game, not the away game.
I'm pretty sure every time I do this, it's Everton v Dynamo Kiev.
John's actually sent me a different match. I've just picked this one because I know you know it, but I don't want Thomas to win. But right, so we've got 11 starters, 2 subs who played the game, and we're going to go with Thomas first. So could we have your first guess, please, Thomas?
Tim Howard in goal.
Tim Howard did indeed play, started in goal. Owen?
Romelu Lukaku.
Of course, this season Romelu Lukaku played. He started up front. First season we had him as a permanent player, I believe.
Seamus Coleman.
James Coleman did start at right back. Very good. Alan?
Every time I say this person, he always loses me the quiz, but I'm going for him anyway. Leighton Baines.
Leighton Baines has once again cost you.
Did he play a game last season?
Leighton Baines did not start this game.
Jesus Christ.
And was not on the bench? He must have been injured.
Injured for the every game that happens, and this Leighton Baines is injured.
So Thomas is the winner, but we'll carry on naming the rest of the team. I don't know why I'm doing this sort of gentle ASMR type voice because I'm the quiz master. Just feels natural. But so go on, Thomas. We're going to carry on.
Obviously there's the infamous game after. But did Alcaraz play in the first leg?
He did indeed. Balderdash chance was. He did start.
Balderdash chance.
He did indeed start the game, Anselm Alcaraz, Owen.
Gareth Barry.
Kaz Baz did indeed start the game. Thomas?
We had Stephen Naismith, didn't he score?
Stephen Naismith did play. Doesn't actually say on my... Oh, it does, he did score.
Oh,
39th minute he scored.
Do you know what we're really not mentioning? That we went 2-1 up in this game in the first leg and Martinez still bloody bottled in the second leg, the bloody idiot.
Yeah, because he played Alcaraz rather than make up with Distan, basically.
Yeah, the way you may put that in the soft voice.
I can't help it. It just sort of clicks in when I'm posting anything. I have to soften my voice and make it more less scouse somehow. I don't get it. Natural to me. So whose turn is it?
Owens, I think.
Owens, yeah, I think it is.
Oh yeah, James McCarthy.
James McCarthy. Yes, sorry, there's a problem with the sheet. James McCarthy did indeed start the game alongside Gareth Barry.
We had Garbutt in Spain, didn't play. We had him.
Garbutt did play, whoever that is, I don't remember him.
Who?
Yeah, Luke Garbutt played at left back instead of Baines.
We gave him his 10-year contract after that.
Is Alan Pardew 8-year 8 year contract.
Did Christine Atu start this one, or was it the second leg he started? I remember him starting one of the games and not being seen.
Christine Atu did not start, nor did he come off the bench, but he was in fact on the bench.
He played the second leg then. He also played him over Aaron Lennon in the second leg, I'm pretty sure. What an idiot.
Have we had a Runa Kone yet?
Runa Kone came off the bench in this game. He did not start, but he did come off the bench.
This was the 14-15 season, wasn't it?
Yes.
I was talking to you about them football conspiracies before, and another conspiracy was the 14-15 season did not happen.
This certainly happened. We somehow got quite deep in the Europa League with a team that had Runa Kone and Christian Atsu playing for it, and Alcaraz and Luke Garbutt.
Ross
Barkley did play. He was substituted.
I've run out of names. Yeah, how many have we got left? I don't actually know how many we've done now.
Got two starters left and one off the bench.
Have we had Jagielka yet?
We have not, and he did indeed play.
There's a lot of pace in that centre-back partnership between Alcaraz and Jagielka there,
Tim. Yeah. So there's your back five. You've got McCarthy and Barry ahead of them. Got Lukaku up front.
There'll be another winger then. Aaron Lennon.
Nope. Aaron Lennon wasn't even on the bench.
Yeah, he'd have been cup tied because Spurs were in the Europa League when
winger. We had if it's not Atsu, it's not Lennon. Did Leon Osman play?
Leon Osman did play, but he came off the bench to replace Ross Barkley, so we've got one starter left.
I can't even. Where does he play?
It's one of the wingers.
We've had Aidan McGeezy.
Nope, not Aidan McGeezy.
We've had some shambolic wingers. That's what I've learned from this quiz. This is awful.
In the squad at this time, there was this unnamed player. There was also Atsu, Lennon, McGeezy. Wow.
Wow, okay. Winger. I presume they're not still at the club. Obviously, there's no one it could be. Oh!
Morales.
Yeah, I was about to say.
It was Kevin Morales.
The man that was sent off, 25 minutes into his debut and wherever he's playing these days?
Yeah.
People who will listen to this have been shouting Kevin Morales for about 15 minutes now.
Absolute loose cannon. He's at least he got a lovely, edible welcome present, whatever that thing was. Looked like loads of sausage rolls, but I'm sure it was something else.
Was that on deadline day where that came out? I can't actually remember now.
Yeah. I was about to go to Magi Gay before Kevin Morales, to be honest.
Magi Gay,
that's the legacy that he left at the club. But the unused substitutes were Joe Robles, Owen's favourite goalkeeper, Darren Gibson.
Even now.
Darren Gibson, Mohamed Bezic, and Tyus Browning and Christine Atsu.
Tyus Browning, Jesus Christ. He's playing for like a fourth division Chinese team now, isn't he?
Chinese international, how dare you?
He must be better than I thought.
Are we not going to touch on the fact that he's not Chinese?
Can also talk about that.
Yeah, that's the problem with that picture, that he's not good enough. I apologise for that. Apparently he does have Chinese ancestry, so he must do when he's playing for China. But
does the Li Tai?
Or do you think he went to uni at a year abroad in China and he's just claimed Chinese heritage ever since?
Possibly. But when you see Tyus Browning, you don't immediately think Chinese, do you? Let's be honest.
Well, Tyus Browning must have still been about 26 when Li Tai was playing for Everton, to be fair. Feels like Tyus Browning's ancient these days.
Yeah,
I couldn't think how long he's been around for, but that is the end of the quiz.
It is the end of the quiz, so Thomas, rather than close the quiz out, you can pick the song that I will close the quiz out to.
I'm very excited. I don't normally get to pick one of these. I'm going to go for Borderline by Tame Impala. Not for any particular reason. There's not much of a theme to it, but it's just the most overplayed song at the moment, so it's the first song that's kind of stuck in my head. But yeah, Terry, I'll let you close it out, Terry. I can sit back at the end of the podcast. It doesn't normally happen.
So, Borderline by Tame Impala. Thanks very much, guys, for joining us. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please follow everyone's social medias, mine, Owen's, Thomas's, and of course, the Toffee Blues. And please remember to subscribe to the YouTube channel, and take care of yourselves. I'm sure we'll be back to winning ways next weekend.